Hi, I'm Gil Headley, and I'm the proud sponsor of the Anatomy and Movement Channel. Welcome. This conference is important. It's both groundbreaking and ground-building. Literally hundreds of thousands of us have gathered here to expand our experience of embodiment, and in so doing, evolve the embodied experience of our world. Embodiment is a practice that anchors us consciously into that which is common to us all, our human body. Regardless of our differences, and we have them, we all live out our lives in a body, and we're all connected by that shared experience. I've been developing integral anatomy for the past 25 years. I believe the human body is not a problem to be solved, but rather a gift to be received and explored. Integral anatomy is an approach to understanding the whole body, which emphasizes textural layers, continuities, and relationships. We notice differences not to create separation, but to appreciate that which unites us all. I'll be presenting here on the Anatomy and Movement Channel, as well as on the main stage, and I hope you'll join me to explore the heart of inner space. And for further study with me, check out my website, gilheadley.com. When you join my site, you'll automatically receive 3 free full-length courses because I'm on a mission to share what I've learned through my own deep exploration of the human form. And I'm certain that these courses will enhance and transform your own embodiment practice. I hope you enjoy the presentation.
Ken, thanks for being here. It's really a pleasure to have you. Ken and I go back quite a long time. I've been a huge admirer of lots of his work. I first heard about Ken because he did miraculous work on lots of broken parkour athletes in the Colorado scene. And I had my own broken downness. So when I went to Colorado to train, I got to have Ken's hands on me, and it was pretty amazing. I've since learned that Ken is a remarkably multi-talented human being, probably the most multi-talented human being that I've ever met. He's not only great at helping parkour people put themselves back together, he was also actually a really, really good parkour athlete himself, which he then transitioned to becoming one of the most prestigious, well-known, innovative pole dancing, male pole dancers in the world. And that's just a start. Ken's an amazing photographer. He's put together amazing videos for my friends. He's, he's given me great business advice through the years, and he's been selected for his short story writing to work with George R.R. Martin. So, you know, just thought I'd throw that in for you guys. So Ken has an incredible amount of knowledge about pain and how we deal with it, and I'm really excited for him to give this presentation. So thank you, Ken, and welcome.
Thank you very much, Rafe. I appreciate that. Little clarification. I think you got confused with a few stories. I did a backflip with George R.R. Martin, and that was a separate thing. But I did workshops with a number of other well-known authors.
Okay. No
worries. I just didn't want that on video and me claiming to have worked with George R.R. Martin. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for coming. I greatly appreciate you taking the time to come out here and participate in this discussion when there are so many innovative speakers out there, so many people that you can take time to listen to. So hopefully I'll make this worth your time. I'm going to quickly go over the global points of this talk real quick, just so you know where we're going. I want to present injuries in a less traditional format. Injuries in general, people are like, do this for this, do this for this. For me, in my clinic, I've been, as Rafe said, traveling a lot. I travel like 9 months out of the year, and I maintain a clinic. What that means is that it's extremely difficult to manage people every single week. And there was a part of me, a piece of me that was always like, am I being a bad doctor because of that? Am I being irresponsible? Or am I equipping my patients to understand how they can treat themselves, take care of themselves with the proper education? And so for me, I believe very much in an intuitive approach to treating yourself. I believe that we have more power within ourselves to identify our illnesses, our injuries, and treat ourselves based on how we personally feel. So that's something I want to empower everyone to feel in this talk. Now, our patterns determine our injuries, especially in terms of structural injuries. If we can identify our patterns, then we could prevent our injuries. The reason that you go see a healthcare practitioner in general, or any therapist, or even your trainer, is to help you diagnose what your problem is. So if we can take that first step of diagnosing ourselves, we can do a lot for ourselves in advance of the actual injury, or if it's a chronic condition that has not improved over the years, maybe we can continue to, you know, hack at it and figure it out ourselves. So as a general rule, what we avoid identifies our weaknesses. Our weaknesses spawn more weaknesses, and that's why injuries can spawn more injuries. Okay. So I've been traveling around mostly teaching movement, so I prefer movement as my form of education, teaching through movement. So we're going to do something all together here. I would like, if possible, as many of you as possible to stand up. And we're going to just do a little exercise a couple times where you just walk around, find a natural casual gait as if you're just going around your house. And I just want you to sit down. Okay. I want you to do this two or three times. Try to keep it within the natural realm and less the analytical realm for now. But find the most comfortable way to sit down. And this can be in a seat or on the floor. I prefer the floor for this, but if you have an injury or you have a situation where you can't sit on the floor comfortably, then go ahead and just use a chair. But at least three times here, walking around and just sitting down. You can pay attention to how you stand up as well, but that's bonus. You don't have to do that. We're mostly focused on the sitting down aspect. Awesome. So in your maybe two to three times, three to four times of sitting down, I want you to just ask yourself, was there a certain pattern to your movements? Did you always favor one leg? Maybe you always crossed one leg over the other. Or perhaps you leaned to one side every single time. Are there other things you could notice, like, there was a catch here or a place of smoothness that just wasn't as smooth as it should be. And for most of us, I think we sit on the floor on occasion. Some of us, maybe this was a new experience or you don't do this quite so much. So sitting on the floor might've had some figuring out to it as well. Okay. For most of this talk, I will be asking you to stand up and sit down frequently. So get used to it. But this time, I would like you to repeat the same method of sitting down on the ground, except I want you to do the opposite. Choose at least one opposite in terms of which leg you cross over, or where you lean, or maybe which leg you put most of your weight on as you sit to the floor. You can choose multiple opposites, but in general, maybe start with one. You can add a few more if you want. Yeah, let's just do that for now, and I'll keep talking. So you're walking around. For me, I always chose my right side. So what if I went to my left side? I always crossed right over left, so left over right. Okay. And if you happen to choose a symmetrical way of sitting down, maybe you did a perfect squat all the way down, and then you sat down. Try just changing one variable, one factor. Maybe your legs are a little wider, maybe they're a little more narrow, or maybe you do choose one leg. And that can be your way of exploring what opposites would be like. Maybe once more. Good. So in doing the opposite leg or opposite lean or opposite weight bearing, how did it feel? Was it just as easy? Or if it wasn't easy, what made it feel less natural? Where were those hiccups? I think this information right here is so valuable to us. For me, every single time I sat down, I realized I did it differently because it's so foreign to me to do the opposite side that there was a reorganization. There was some figuring out that I had to do, which means that I am so predominantly towards my right side that I never do my left side. Kind of disturbs me personally as someone who considers himself a mover. But maybe it's the same for other activities too. Maybe not just sitting. Perhaps you always reach for the fork with the right hand, or perhaps you always prop your chin, leaning to one side. All right, so I'm gonna have you do this one more time. And I want you to do the natural pattern first, and then do your opposite pattern after that. However, I'm gonna ask you to do it extremely slowly, okay? As slow as you possibly can control it. All right, let's take a moment to do that. So walking can be normal pace. You can just walk at whatever pace you want. This is just to forget that you're doing this exercise. And then as you sit down, just go slowly. Standing up, you can go at your own rate if you'd like, or you can do that slowly as well because that's also information. Then the next time I want you to go slowly with your opposite leg or opposite lean, whatever your opposite was. Good. You can continue to finish while I speak, or you can do it again if you'd like for this one. But your goal is to identify the moments where you feel uncertain, afraid, a little bit out of control. And you may even notice what are you doing to avoid certain engagements, certain parts of your body where you're almost afraid to move through that space. Maybe your knee doesn't bend through a certain spot. So instead of actually bending the knee, you move your hips around it. Or maybe there's an area where you accelerated because you lost sudden strength. There's an abrupt weakness that you didn't know about. Maybe there was particular stiffness. Maybe it's a range of motion issue. For me, I found I'm standing up. I was like, wow, this is difficult on my opposite side. So for me, there's a new pattern there that I was like, apparently I never weight bear in this particular way on that side and push through it. Now, I never want it technically encourage anyone to push through pain. But there's a certain amount of value in discovering the pain. And we're only doing it once or maybe twice, just to learn about ourselves, to become more, again, intuitive. Okay? So I want to present here, now that we've all done this exercise together, some examples of some friends I have. Okay? All of these people are more or less desk job people. Let's see if I can do this correctly. Screen share. Okay. And everyone can see this? I hope so. Okay. So this is Teddy. On the right, we have some pictures of Teddy that I stole from his social media. On the left are videos I asked him to submit to me. Okay. The farthest left, I don't know if the screen flipped it for you, but the most outside video is him sitting naturally, what he considers natural to him. The next video, closer to the center, is Teddy sitting in what he called a creative way, or I asked him to be creative about. So here's his first video. I'll play it a couple times. Okay. And I want you to just observe anything that you notice, maybe a similarity to the way you do things. Maybe it's different for different reasons. Okay. Now let's look at his creative way of sitting. I actually cracked up the first time I saw that. It was fantastic. Just collapsing to his knees there and going to the side. And I'll discuss more why we're doing this creative piece later, but for now, I just want you to observe. See if you notice anything about maybe in these pictures, certain postures that would have given you the idea of how he's sitting or how he's choosing to sit. Okay, so let me see if I can get to the next slide here. Apparently I can't control this when, I'll just pull it up here. Okay, this is Joe, another desk job person. He's awesome. You can see he's got a lot of humor to him and also children. So we'll watch him walking to a sit. Okay, I'll do that one more time for you to observe. Okay, and some things that I observe here is when he's walking towards us, you can see a lot of like external rotation of his feet, right? And yet he sits in a very like symmetrical squat. Now, because of a, factors, legalities and so on and so forth, I can't like say, and I shouldn't say he has this and this problem. So I'm not gonna go as far as to do that, but I'm just trying to notice what's going on. Here is his creative sit. I was really impressed by that because that showed a certain amount of body awareness that honestly really surprised me about Joe. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. Because he showed a level of coordination and organization that was so intuitive that he could move through this quite smoothly. Okay. Let's move on to the next one. This is Steve. Steve, you may not be able to tell in this video, but he's like 6'5", 300, I don't wanna say the exact poundage and get it wrong, but I remember trying to wrestle this guy. And it was a matter of just like, okay, nothing I do is working. So here's Steve. Okay. I would say Steve's life is like 90% computer work. All right, little slide through. Okay, one more time. I find these very interesting personally, but love it. Okay, and finally, this is Kenny. Kenny lives a like pseudo half-life thing where most of his life is on the computer, but he's also a professional dancer. So once again, I find that it could be an interesting mix of these two things. Personally, I'm also very similar to that in that I spend serious hours on the computer, and probably several of you as well, even though you consider it your career to be a mover or teach movement. So here's Kenny. Okay. And I want you to notice on the second play how much of everything is going to the right here. You see this right lean, goes to the right, right, right. Okay. And I'm going to pick on Kenny a little bit because I know he probably doesn't care. And that's his creative one, which I thought was adorable. So clearly quite athletic and yet comfortable. So Kenny does a dance form called Lindy Hop primarily. And the thing about Lindy Hop is you're always spinning one direction. You're always stepping in one direction. You're always leaning. You're always holding and pulling from one direction. And you can't necessarily correlate or cause it or just call it a causality, but you can notice these patterns as well. Great. Okay. Now that we've looked through those, I'm going to turn off screen share here. Okay, back to here. Why did I show you the creative sit? Creative sitting is another way to expose our natural patterns, because when we sit creatively or do anything creatively, we are showing our body or exploring our body in a way that we still feel mostly safe doing. It's not so much creative exploration that we feel at risk, in other words, which means that it can also expose to us where our weaknesses are and where our patterns are. So we're gonna do that together now. This is where we get up again. I want you to find as many creative ways to sit, and if you want, of course, stand on the way up as possible. See if there are, just focus on the creative aspect for now. How many ways can I get down and get up from the ground? And we don't have to do this slowly, but let's do it a little bit quickly. Just finding interesting ways that feel fun, maybe interesting to you. Just counting down, standing up. And you'll notice that in these videos, everyone chose to sit cross-legged at the end. Do you have to? And the next few times that you do this, can you notice if you've done something multiple times or you have a tendency to do something the same way again and again and again? Why do you do that? And this is challenging, but for many of you, for many of all of us, we only feel comfortable approaching the ground from this position, forward flexion, hip flexion, right? Why don't we feel comfortable more side bending or even back bending? What about that makes us so uncomfortable? Is it because we can't see it? Or perhaps there's another reason. Maybe there's, as you go into your back bend towards the ground, maybe there's a weakness or pain or a sense of vulnerability somewhere in your low back, in your knees, in your ankles. All right. You can, again, keep exploring if you feel like it. But now that you've experienced both natural and creative sitting patterns, do you feel pretty certain that you know where the areas of weakness are in your body? Did you discover something that maybe there you weren't aware of before? I'm going to fly through the next examples here just so that you can see them. I'll do one more screen share here. Let's see. All right, this is Eve. These are people who have a little bit less of a desk job or maybe no desk job at all. So Eve is normally a non-desk job person, but because of COVID, like many of us, she's had to teach. She usually works with children and instructing children. For many of this like squat would be impossible. And her creative one is a pistol squat, apparently. Let's just make it hard on ourselves. One more time. Okay. Cherry is a photographer. She's, again, a lot of desk job, but she spends a good amount of her life taking care of herself in terms of movement. And that was kind of cool. That was taking a bit of like momentum and making that part of her movement. I don't think you would be able to do that very well slowly. And alternatively, this is her creative one. I like how serious her face is when she does this, but. So again, it exposes what she's comfortable doing that for many of us, we might not be comfortable with. Let's take it a little bit further. This is Dudley. He's a fairly well-regarded hand balancer and straps artist. And what I found interesting about this one is his natural sit kind of looks, I don't want to call it awkward, but it doesn't actually look as natural as his creative one. So maybe this guy is like so creative that his creative is the only thing he knows. All right. And then we have Kira. You can see she's quite a personality. Kira is a pole and parkour athlete. She's addicted to movement. And even though she has an actual job, I would say that she treats movement as her entire life. So this is Kira's normal sit. Okay, very cat-like comfortable. She's very relaxed through this whole movement. I can't remark on the posture, but hey, you know, she's clearly really comfortable doing this. And her creative one. is very creative and very challenging. So what she feels comfortable with is backbending. And you'll notice that if you know Kira or if you've seen any of her social media, backbend, backbend, backbend. Like everything she does is backbend, which again exposes where she feels strong and safe. This is Brandon, a fairly well-regarded parkour athlete. Rafe would know him as well. He chose to do this first one with, I don't know if those are boxers or what, but here's this sit. Again, that lean to the right, placing the hand down with a little rotation and his creative one. So despite the semi poor landing, let's call it, he felt so comfortable that he could do this cold, even though it's an explosive movement. And he didn't really care if how he felt. And that kind of brings us to, well, actually, let me show you one other video first. Okay, this is Marlo. She's another speaker here. Career dancer who has to, like many of us, do a lot of computer work out of requirements of our modern age. This is her. And you can see just how smooth that one is, where it's like you can't see any sense of impact in that movement, and her creative one. Now, Marlowe is a bit of an exception because this is actually what she teaches, is floor movement. So I can't say this is better or worse, but I think many of us can detect that there's a certain amount of comfort that she has that comes through her movement. So I want to give a little aside here. In the age category of above 65, breaking your hip and having complications related to breaking your hip is one of the leading causes of death. Which is really interesting is that just the ability to get to the ground safely becomes a life survival trait, even in our modern age. Because what happens is many people, as they age, they lose the strength and integrity to bend their knees. They lose the body organization as they like don't do this activity very often. It becomes a creative activity, just like you discovered, where you had to pause for a second and go, what do I do next? And if you have to stop and think, what do I do next for sitting down, but you're slipping on ice or you trip on something, you don't have that time anymore. And if you fall, hit the ground, break your hip, and it leads to your death, I really don't like that feeling. I don't like hearing about those stories because I think this is something that's entirely preventable just by changing our activities. So that's an aside, but we can consider these exercises a survival skill as well. The ultimate point of what I'm trying to get across to you guys right here is that all your activities of daily living should be considered a form of training. It's only in the modern age that we can survive without movement. But if you look at any other species, any other animal, they have to move to survive. So when you do a repetitive pattern, let's call that training. We shouldn't call exercise, we shouldn't set aside as part of our day. It should be built into our day. And to avoid overtraining, we should also consider all the other things, all the other ways of moving that we have available to us. Poor posture is merely a sign of imbalanced muscles that have possibly led to skeletal changes as well. In a way, posture doesn't even matter because if you were moving, if you constantly were doing something, that posture wouldn't impact you skeletally over the long term. It wouldn't create imbalance because it's just a moment. So if we call it overtraining, what we're essentially saying is that the involved muscles get stronger and the uninvolved muscles become weaker. We're gonna take it a little bit further and we're gonna say that strong postural muscles or strong muscles in general, are frequently the shorter muscles. And the weaker muscles are often the stretched muscles. We can easily see this common one right here, right? Shortened in the front, stretched in the back. And here's where it gets interesting. The tight muscle is both the stretch muscle and the shortened muscle. Tight is not really a measurement of anything in this case. Because if my shoulders are constantly rolled forward, these muscles are trying to engage. They're trying to pull my shoulders back, and so they're tightening up. They're pulling, trying to get me back into a neutral position. Or maybe because I'm here so much, because my joints aren't stacked, they have to carry a load. An excess load for a long period of time, and they start getting tight, 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 tight. even though they're stretched. So they're stretched and tight. Whereas in the front, they're shortened and tight. Okay. So I don't know if I'm missing messages here or something. Okay. So let's talk about just some common imbalances that many of us deal with. We've all heard probably of upper and lower cross, which is, this is the upper cross, right? And then lower cross, I don't know if you can see it here, right? I won't go into each muscle that's tight or whatever, but those are very common patterns. Face down sleepers frequently have one SCM that's tight because they always sleep to one side, right? Side sleepers oftentimes have one shoulder that's forward and then it's tight on that side and weak on the other. And all of these imbalances are leading to future injury when they do stuff. Let's say you're an athlete. If you always have one shoulder forward and you do a handstand, what's gonna happen? Maybe that's the reason, and maybe it's not technique. Maybe it's actually just your resting body position. Another one we saw in people walking is this external rotation of the legs. What happens when you externally rotate? Why are we externally rotating so much? Frequently, it's because we're sitting so much. So if we sit and we slouch like this, this feels natural because we're taking something and we're pushing our, let's just say, butt together, which externally rotates our hip, which leads to a change in your gait pattern, the way you walk, which can lead to fallen arches, medial knee damage, so on and so forth. Dancers with pointed toes, point your toes. We already build a lot of strength in our calves. So when we point our toes more and more and more, we're shortening those muscles. We're building strength in a direction that it's already very strong in. So maybe the solution is flex your feet. Okay, wrist flexors versus wrist extensors, finger flexors versus finger extensors. Those are common patterns. And there are some areas of the body that are very built to do one action. Our biology, our anatomy tells us to close our hand more than open our hands, but there's still a balance to it. There's still a certain amount of like, you do it too much, okay? Pronators versus supinators is another one, because we're always on the computer typing, right? How many of you can't even hang with straight arms in a supinated position on a bar? If you teach movement, you've seen that, where people are like, oh, this is as far as I can stretch because it's so tight. And then we ask, why do we have carpal tunnel, right? Why do we have wrist pain? Because we're training this all day long, when the solution is very simple, do the opposite. So that is essentially the biggest point that I'm going to offer you here, is do the opposite. This is perhaps the most frequent line that I give in the clinic. Whatever you do, if you can identify what you do all the time, do the literal opposite. So upper cross. What is the opposite of this? It's not more of this. That clearly won't solve it because we're already stretched up here. The solution is take your head and put it on the back of your body. So instead of being in front of the body, can we get on the back of the body? And it looks very strange, but you're building strength in the muscles that are weak, that are imbalanced. And you are naturally, by doing that, stretching the ones that are tight at the exact same time. Just by doing the opposite. And by continuing to do that again and again and again, you'll build strength and maybe your skeleton will start finding neutral again. Maybe some of your injuries, if you're stuck in this forward position, actually, this is an example I give very often. Try to push your chin forward and go slowly, but look left and look right. How far do you get? you've probably lost about half your range of motion in your neck if your neck is in this really protracted forward position, because you've locked out the segments of your lower neck. And so maybe your neck problems are actually due to just your resting posture, your muscle imbalance. And maybe when you do this, you'll notice that, oh, I can't lift my shoulders up either with my neck forward. Oh, that's weird. And yet you're like, I'm in handstand class, so I'm gonna do it anyway. Ah, and now I've damaged my shoulders as well. All because of this neck position of what we're doing on the computer all day long. So do the opposite. Whatever it is in your daily life, if you always forward bend, do some back bending. If you're always hunching, do some arching. This can get very complicated. That's why I have a job. I find these things, I discover them. I point out the imbalances that people have because they may not be aware of it, but that doesn't mean that you can't discover it for yourself. Most all of you are already compensating for the injury, for the weakness, by avoiding certain movements. But compensation should only be a temporary measure. Compensation is there to protect you in the moment. But you do that too long and you will damage whatever is compensating too. This is the reason I titled this the chain of injury. So the chain of injury is when one injury and favoring one action leads to the injury of other areas. Okay? I don't know, let me see how much time I have. Am I reading that right?
243 right now.
Okay. Okay, so I might have to fly through this then because I don't think I actually have the time to cover all this. But in general, there is a relationship in muscles. We call it the trilogy of muscles, where there's an agonist, a prime mover. A synergist is muscles that assist in that movement. An antagonist is the opposite action, is the muscle that does the opposite action. So in general, the tight muscle, remember we talked about that, the tight muscle is not the problem. If there's a knot in your muscle, chances are that's the healthy muscle. And this is something I have to repeat again and again and again, because almost every therapy out there addresses the one with the knot in it. The tight one or the short one. They find all these different variations of that. Whereas the true solution comes from strengthening the weak muscle. So that's my very quick summary of that category. Let's go ahead and go to Q&A then, if there's any questions.
Yeah, so Sarah asks, I seem to tighten up way more on my left side and get sore and feel weaker in that side. Can I rebalance or do we all have a weaker side?
There's a philosophy in many people that believes that everything has to be balanced, but that's not actually true. We have a dominant side. However, if it goes too much into one direction, then absolutely it can lead to injury and it can lead to problems. So for most people, yes, you should be strengthening, you should be building up that opposite side, and you can. You can do that work yourself, absolutely, and it probably will help you, even if it doesn't address your particular complaint.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's so important to have that idea of more balanced is often good, but balanced is not realistic.
Exactly.
In a human body. The body's just not balanced, you know, the heart's on one side, the organs are on one side, not the other. Kelly Banisher asks, when you were discussing sitting and talking about the potential of falling when we aren't used to going to the ground, I was wondering if you have any comments about a special awareness of the plantar or big toe in balancing and preventing falling.
The plantar in relation to preventing a fall. I'm not entirely sure what you mean by that question, to be honest. My mind immediately goes to gait patterns into that external rotation, because a lot of issues with the toes in general, especially the big toe, are in two categories. You have one which is due to tight footwear, bunions, where it's not tracking correctly, and then you also have a gait pattern. So if I were giving this example of if I step over my foot with an externally rotated leg, my momentum's going this way. You can see my knee is no longer tracking. My knee is now trying to bend in this plane. That's not the direction it should go. And in the same way, my foot as I push off is in that same plane over to the side, which does damage over time to the greater toe. And of course, can lead to injury, not only in the knee, but foot, ankle, low back. I don't know if that answered your question, but.
So the next question then would be, what do you suggest to your desktop friends do to improve?
Well, in general, I'm a big proponent of frequent movement. So in modern society, we frequently believe that convenience is better. We think less movement is better. But what if you put a necessary item like a pen underneath your desk? Would it be so terrible for you to get up, crawl under your desk, pick up that pen, and then come back? Yes, it would decrease your efficiency, but would it be better for your body? And we don't have to take such an extreme example, but what if you change your environment with things that you frequently have to access, and it requires maybe I have to stand up and grab something and move? Because again, the problem is we were not built to sit 8 to 12 hours a day. Our bodies are suffering. I consider sitting like the death of so many people ultimately. So just forcing yourself to have more activity in your office environment, be it more monitors or an adjustable table or moving your keyboard around frequently, or maybe three different spaces where you think are your workspace, especially if you have a laptop, you just grab it and move it to the new one and then move it to the new one throughout the day. That's all great.
Yeah, I haven't sat as much in my life as I have over the last 3 weeks. And so doing all the movement sessions with the different speakers has been very revelatory of just how uncomfortable you can get in your body and how quickly you can get uncomfortable in your body.
So fast.
Sitting.
Maybe discomfort is actually a good thing, actually. Maybe if you're a little uncomfortable, then you're forced to move.
Kelly says, thanks. I think you answered her question. So then Poe asks, can we correct bunions with doing the opposite?
In a way, yes. It depends on how far along you are. A bunion is essentially a calcification buildup. And the traditional treatment is just to shave it down, and sometimes they need to break the toe and then reset it. The most frequent cause of it is tight shoe wear in the front of the foot. There is a genetic component, absolutely, but toe spreaders, these little guys, working just not wearing shoes so much, going outside and building the strength. I can't go into it too much, but there's definitely an association. I don't know, did I lose audio? I just got a bing. You still hear me? Okay. There's another thing that I didn't have time to talk about, which are the lumbricals inside your feet. Lumbricals are the muscles that are interdigit right here. And these are very frequently super tight, which means that your foot can't actually spread. So every time you step on the ground, it becomes a block rather than something that opens and spreads, and your toes also extending through that, which is something that you would normally have if you didn't wear the shoes. You're essentially casting your foot when you wear a tight shoe. And we all know what happens when we cast, like an arm, an elbow break. All your muscles wither away.
Yeah, absolutely. I have this idea that modern life is essentially a series of over and under use injuries because of the lifestyles we're forced to live. So we should always be looking at what is the overuse component and what is the underuse component that's giving rise to this, and how do I address that?
That's that easy.
So Merrill asks, what would you suggest I as a violinist who has a left shoulder that comes forward do unless I pull it back consciously?
Yeah, at this point, if you have a career or any activity that requires you to be in a chronic position, and I'm a violinist, that's where I used to be, honestly, you literally have to train the opposite actively and strengthen it. And that might be resistance, that might be work that is entirely different. So here's your position as a violinist, right? So that means this is the position that you need to strengthen. And we're not going to talk about the neck.
So maybe some like rings work or strap type work might be a good training if it's appropriately dosed.
Yeah, that can get very complicated to give everyone specific, like if the person has a shoulder forward that's to the point that the bone has, the skeleton has actually changed shape, you can't necessarily give people a blanket like this is the treatment with. So you always have to consider that individual situation, which obviously we can't do here. So
yeah, okay. So that's the questions that we have so far. If you have any more questions, go ahead and fill them in. Yeah, so there's a few comments over here, just checking in on them. But yeah, people are really, really amazed at how much information they got out of, oh my God, this sitting down, standing up thing is pretty pretty profound. We did have a couple more questions that came in. This is probably, here we go. Four questions real quick here. So I'm not sure we'll be able to get to all these, but thank you guys for putting them in. I broke my right elbow, aged 4 years. It was pinned together. Then 10 years ago, I broke the scaphoid and it was pinned. The elbow is misshapen and now the shoulder is in terrible pain. I can't lift my arm or move it without pain.
Okay. So actually my last slide that I didn't really cover is there is a certain amount of you have to consult your healthcare provider for the appropriate questions and appropriate situations because everyone is an individual. However, I have treated and I have dealt with patients with pins, with artificial limbs, with actually this poor guy. He had so many surgeries on one side of his body that the opposite side was too long in comparison. So they decided to chop his tibia, just cut pieces out so that he could be at the same height. Seriously. So,
oh God.
Anyway, that aside, there are a number of surgical situations which we tend to think about as inhibiting us from full function. I would say treat it normally. I mean, feel yourself, be intuitive, listen to your own body, but in general, there's no reason that that should restrict you from trying to expand what you can do. Stop thinking about it as an inhibition, like I cannot do this thing because of this. That is gonna harm you more than continue to push and explore into something. And I mean, I don't know if my patients are listening to this or some of them, but many of them have gotten a lot farther than any of us would have ever dreamed, even including me.
Yeah, we had a wonderful presentation from Jackie Wu last night about play as a form of therapy and about the power of play. And one thing that she brought up that I think is kind of important is you will run into healthcare practitioners who tell you you can't do it. And yeah. Who tell you yeah. that you're deformed for life and you just need to accept this. And so yes, there are questions that you're not gonna be able to solve by listening to a internet, you know, presentation. But if you get a no on what you believe is possible, keep looking.
Yeah.
Find the healthcare practitioners who really want and believe in your ability to keep functioning.
That's I very much agree with that.
Mm-hmm. So Meryl just says, woohoo, hadn't thought of that. Thank you. JC says, what is your take on jaw pain? I've been told the jaw pain is usually a symptom of something else, but is there an opposite to clenching the jaw apart from not clenching?
Yeah, I'm sorry, jaw is extremely complicated. There are entire sub-professions within sub-professions that deal specifically with just the jaw. For what I would say as a reminder is that most of the jaw muscles insert into the neck. It's either the neck or into the skull. So imbalances in the neck musculature can very well cause jaw issues, jaw tracking as well. So when I treat a jaw patient, I don't treat the jaw, not directly, not until I've already taken them through the neck and cranials. But again, that given its complexity, I would say you kind of need to speak with an expert. So I'm looking at you specifically.
Yeah, I love that principle of looking up and downstream as a general kind of heuristic. So thanks for bringing that one up. So we don't have time to answer all the rest of the questions, guys. But this question is what we need to ask you is there a possibility to learn from you online if you're from the other side of the world? So if people want to get more of the Dr. Ken magic, where do they go? How do they follow up on this?
Again, gray zones. I had to speak with various legal counsels on this one because I am licensed in Colorado for practicing medicine, but I am not licensed in any other state or any other country. And so as soon as I begin teaching medicine under that category to anyone who's outside of that Colorado bubble, I'm now in hot water. And it becomes actually a business license, business insurance factor. So right now, I don't have any materials. This is something I just wanted to present to people as general philosophies and concepts. Most of my instruction goes to pole dancers right now. So I teach pole techniques and pole biomechanics, but I'm not teaching so much online otherwise for health.
Okay. So I believe that Kirsten is putting in all the links though for folks who want to check out your pole dancing stuff and all the rest of the amazing work that you do. If you guys love this and you want to understand more about different approaches to therapy, like I mentioned, Jackie Wu's presentation is great. I think you guys would get a lot also out of Kelly Stride's presentation on some of the heuristics he uses to help understand pain and how to get out of pain. I think there's a lot of interesting crossovers between those. So if you want to, I always think it's really useful if a presentation hits home for you and you feel like the information was useful, be able to watch it again. You don't want to absorb all the information in one go. So you've got 48 hours to watch this presentation with Ken again. And then if you really want to do the deep dive and be able to cross compare what Ken is saying with what Jackie's saying, with what Kelly is saying, what Perry Nicholson is saying, then upgrading to library is going to be a huge benefit to you. And pain and injury also are not only physical events, they are psychological events. We also have a whole track on trauma, and there's some really great insights over there. And if you own the entire library, you can start to kind of harvest some insight from all of that. So those are some reasons why you might want to upgrade to owning the entire conference so you can do a deeper dive into the research. And of course, it's nice for all of us who put this together for you guys for free, because it did cost a lot of money and a lot of hours. And it'd be nice for us to have some filthy lucre in our pockets at the end of this. So thank you guys very much. And the last question for you, Ken, what is your number one tip for people living a more embodied life?
Number one tip for, I lost sound on one of my headphones.
Living a more embodied life.
Living a more embodied life. Play, I'm definitely along that line. Play, which I also consider dance. So the active exploration, that's so critical to health.
Excellent. Well, Ken, I hope you and I get a chance to play together again soon. And I look forward to future chats. And thank you very much once more for this presentation. It was deeply informational.
Thank you all. Appreciate it.